You're listening to The Philosopher's Note on the Procrastination Equation. More wisdom in less time.
Hi, this is Brian. Welcome to The Philosopher's Note on the Procrastination Equation. How to stop putting things off and start getting stuff done. By Piers Steele, PhD. As always, let's kick it off with a quote. This book is about every promise you made to yourself but broke. It is about every goal you set but let slide, never finding the motivation. It is about diets postponed, late-night scrambles to finish projects, and disappointed looks from the people who depend on you or from the one you see in the mirror. It is about being the slacker in your family and the straggler in your circle of friends. It is about that menacing cloud of uncompleted chores, from the late bill payments to the clutter that fills your home. It is about that doctor's appointment you have been putting off and the finances still in disarray. It is about dawdling, delay, opportunity lost, and more, much more. This book is also about the other side, the moments of action when procrastination gives way to crystal clarity and attention. Work is devoured without hesitation, and giving up never even occurs to you. It is about personal transformation, about unencumbered desire free of internal competition, and the guiltless leisure you can enjoy when your daily tasks are done. This book is about potential, wasted and fulfilled, about dreams that fade into obscurity and dreams we can make come true. Best of all, this book is about shifting the rest of your life away from putting it off to getting it done. End quote. Piers Steele, PhD, The Procrastination Equation. Piers is one of the leading researchers on the science of motivation and specifically procrastination. He's also a smart and funny writer. This is a great book packed with research pointing to the evolutionary and biological roots of our tendency to procrastinate. Did you know other animals, even pigeons, procrastinate? It's true. And of course, it's also packed with big ideas on what to do about our procrastination. I'm excited to share some of my favorites, so let's jump straight in. We'll start with the procrastination equation. That's our first big idea. Here it is. Quote, expectancy times value over impulsiveness times delay. Imagine a mathematical equation, numerator, denominator. You have expectancy times value on the top, impulsiveness times delay on the bottom. And there it is, the procrastination equation, inspired by the common elements that determine when we procrastinate and crafted together from the most deeply researched elements of social science's strongest motivation theories. The procrastination equation accounts for every major finding for procrastination. As the deadline for any task gets pushed further into the future, delay increases and our motivation to tackle the tasks decreases. Impulsiveness multiplies the effects of delay. And so, impulsive people feel the effects of time far less acutely, at least at first. Consequences have to be on their doorstep before they start paying attention to them, unless they are particularly large. And what makes consequences large? Expectancy and value. The bigger the payoff and the greater the likelihood of receiving it, the sooner it will capture your attention. End quote. The procrastination equation. Let's unpack it a bit. Again, we've got our calculation here, our little formula. Numerator, expectancy times value divided by impulsiveness times delay equals motivation. You may want to write that down. It's a great way to recall and to drill into your mind even more deeply, as we learned in the note on A Mind for Numbers. So it all starts with expectancy. Do you expect a great outcome? Are you confident in your ability to create whatever it is you aspire to create? If expectancy is high, you're much less likely to procrastinate than if it's low. Next up, value. Do you value whatever it is you're working on? If it has a great deal of meaning for you, that's great. You'll be much more motivated than if it has little meaning, in which case you're more likely to be bored and procrastinate. That's our numerator. If we want high levels of motivation, we need to make sure we expect to achieve things we're excited about, aka we value. If our numerator is low, we're in trouble before we even get to the denominator. If it's high, we still need to pay attention to the denominator, which is going to cut our motivation down if we're not aware. Now we're ready for the number one factor connected to procrastination, impulsiveness. As Piers tells us, without impulsiveness, there would be no such thing as chronic procrastination. Impulsiveness, in short, is our tendency to want immediate gratification, but only all the time. Not always helpful for pursuing long-term important projects. Then we have delay. Essentially, this measures how far into the future our project needs to be completed. The longer the delay, the greater the likelihood of procrastination. And, of course, the shorter the delay, the less likely. Say hello to college cramming the night before an exam. That's the procrastination equation. If we want high levels of motivation, we need to increase our expectancy plus value and decrease our impulsiveness plus delay. Of course, helping us do that is what the book is all about. Let's take a quick look at some of my favorite practical big ideas. Next big idea, the success spiral. Quote, "This is an example of a success spiral. If we set ourselves an ongoing series of challenging but ultimately achievable goals, we maximize our motivation and make the achievement meaningful, reflecting our capabilities. Each hard-won victory gives a new sense of self and a desire to strive for more. It is similar to the way Polynesian explorers colonized the South Pacific. From their home port, they saw in the distance signs of a new island, a new goal, reachable if they made the proper provisions. Setting sail, they eventually made land, only to see another distant island from their new vantage point. Every step forward is enabled by the step just taken." End quote. The success spiral. This is from the chapter on expectancy. Remember, if you don't have confidence you will achieve the outcome you're working on, how in the world do you think you'll be motivated? Hint, you won't be. You'll procrastinate. We need to build our expectancy muscles, and success spirals are a great way to do that. We've touched on this in different ways throughout these notes. I love the vision of Polynesian explorers hopping from island to island. So cool. Success to success to success. Another one of my favorite metaphors, dominoes. I'm writing this in August 2015. In December 2014, about 8 months ago, I created the note on Steve Chandler's great book, Wealth Warrior, in which I talked about our strategy as we relaunched my Optimal Living membership program. At that time, we had zero members and were weeks away from launching. Leaning on the mojo of this awesome video on the physics of dominoes, I've got a link to it, great YouTube video, I described our strategy to first focus on getting one member. There was a lot of work to do just to get everything set up to accept our first payment and welcome our first member. Getting to that first member was all we cared about. Think knocking over the first domino, getting to the island we could see. We knew that if we could get one member, we could get 10. If we could get 10, we could get 100. If we could get 100, we could get 1,000. And if we can get 1,000, we could get 10,000. Each micro goal created its own success spiral, and sure enough, we steadily went from 1 to 10 to 100 to 1,000. We're approaching 5,000 as I record this, and my confidence in our ability to get to 10,000 is now absolute. My expectancy is really, really high. Post 10,000, we get to have fun seeing how we get to 100,000. So success spirals, island hopping dominoes. How can you break your big goal down into smaller micro goals and build your confidence expectancy muscles? Seriously, how can you? Think about that right now, and let's do that. P.S. Gary Keller talks about dominoes in his great book, The One Thing. Check out those notes as well, and remember this. He says, quote, "The key is over time. Success is built sequentially. It's one thing at a time." Next big idea is a good one. Mental contrasting is greater than creative visualization. Quote, "What happens if you forego the second step and just focus on the positive fantasies alone?" Creative visualization advocates just that. It involves creating vivid and compelling pictures of your heart's desire with the aim of drawing this vision toward you. But Odin Jen, who has researched this for 20 years, finds that such fantasies tend to have the opposite effect than advertised. They sap motivational energy. The only wealth created by creative visualization is a rich fantasy life. Whether the task is preparing for exams, getting a job, recovering from surgery, smoking less, dating an attractive stranger, or improving personal relationships, she found that the worst performing group used positive fantasies alone. You are better off not using the technique at all, end quote. Creative visualization versus mental contrasting. The research is unequivocal. Creative visualization, in which we merely imagine our ideal outcome, is, all caps, not effective, period. We need to add another component. We need to mentally contrast our ideal scene with our current reality. We need to get real about the gap between them and be willing to look at the inevitable obstacles we will face in pursuit of making that ideal a reality. We do that and magic happens. It's like some motivational switch is flipped and we get to work. Scientists describe this as creating a necessity to act. We want that. Heidi Gran Halvorsen, one of the world's leading researchers focused on the science of effective goal setting, refers to the same research by Odinchin in her great book, Succeed. See those notes. Heidi tells us, quote, "What about visualizing success? I won't name names, but it seems like there are an awful lot of self-help books out there telling people that if they just picture what they want in their minds, it will somehow happen. That would be great if it were true, but scientifically speaking, there really isn't much evidence for it. On the other hand, visualization can be very helpful if you imagine the steps you will take in order to succeed rather than the success itself. Mentally simulating the process of achieving the goal rather than the hoped-for outcome not only results in a more optimistic outlook, but in greater planning and preparation. Picture yourself doing what it takes to succeed, and you will soon find yourself believing that you can. The best part is, you'll be absolutely right." She also tells us, quote, "Don't visualize success. Instead, visualize the steps you will take in order to succeed. Just picturing yourself crossing the finish line doesn't actually help you get there, but visualizing how you run the race, the strategies you will use, the choices you will make, the obstacles you will face, not only will give you greater confidence, but also leave you better prepared for the task ahead. And that is definitely realistic optimism." So here's to mental contrasting. See your ideal outcome. See your current reality. Get fired up about the possibilities and get real about the effort it will take to get there. Know you can achieve it, know it'll be challenging, and that you're willing to put in the required work. That's true confidence. And then, of course, get to work. Next big idea. Want to add a month of productivity to your year? Quote, "Here is a trick that will give you an extra month of efficiency each year. It's easy to implement, immediately effective, and doesn't cost a cent. First, go to your email program. Second, disable all the audio alerts and mailbox pop-ups. That's it. There is no third step. Banishing email notifications will make you about 10% more efficient, and over a year, that translates into one more month of productivity. The best work happens when you engage deeply on a single task. Every time you stop your flow, you have to once again decide to work, and then it takes time to become fully re-engaged. Unfortunately, we are conditioned to answer email instantly, responding to the telltale ding like Pavlov's dogs. Unless you have a pressing reason, check your email at your convenience during natural breaks in your productivity," end quote. This is big. It's from the chapter on reducing our impulsiveness. Remember, that's the number one productivity poison. Here's the key. We need to reduce distractions. That is in all caps. We need to focus. You may think your multitasking is awesome, but it's not. Every single time you pull your attention away from the task at hand and do something else, no matter how trivial or how quickly you do it, you're shredding your attention, losing momentum, and forcing yourself to get your momentum back. You do that dozens or hundreds of times a day, responding to every email, text, push notification, etc., and you're wasting a ton, all caps, 3 exclamation points, a ton of time. Piers estimates that simply banishing your email notifications will increase your productivity 10%. 10% may not sound like a lot, but add that up over the course of the year, and you just got a whole month of productivity back. I'm rubbing my eyes right now. That's nuts. Little things matter. which is one of the reasons why I'm so excited about all the big ideas in the notes, plus micro classes. Any one idea can literally change your life. The aggregate effect of diligently, patiently, persistently playing with and testing ideas that inspire us? Mind-bogglingly awesome. P.S. One of the best ways to free ourselves of distractions and get great work done? Time blocking. Here's how Gary Keller puts it in The One Thing. He says, quote, "Most people think there's never enough time to be successful, but there is when you block it. Time blocking is a very results-oriented way of viewing and using time. It's a way of making sure that what has to be done gets done." Alexander Graham Bell said, "Concentrate all your thoughts upon the work at hand. The sun's rays do not burn until brought to a focus. Time blocking harnesses your energy and centers it on your most important work. It's productivity's greatest power tool." End quote. Very important question. When's your next time block? Here's to putting productivity's greatest power tool to work. Next big idea, get plenty of sleep. Quote, "Get plenty of sleep. Being too tired is the number one reason people cite for putting things off. If you are not getting 8 hours of sleep a night, you are harming your performance during the day. Lack of sleep significantly lowers all forms of cognitive performance, making everything you do more difficult. Here's an idea. Instead of setting your alarm clock to get yourself up, set it to cue you to go to sleep. When you hear that buzz, start your wind down routine." End quote. Sleep. All caps, maybe about 8 exclamation points. Know this, being too tired is the number one reason people cite for putting things off. I love how clear Piers is with this. Quote, "If you are not getting 8 hours of sleep a night, you are harming your performance during the day." End quote. It's really simple. Are you getting 8 hours of sleep a night? If yes, high five. If not, now a good time to start prioritizing that? For what time would it be wise for you to set your go-to-bed alarm right now? P.S. I've got a link to more on the value of sleep. We've got a number of notes that I think you'll enjoy. For now, final big idea, goal setting equals motivation super fuel. Quote, "Goal setting, proper goal setting, is the smartest thing you can do to battle procrastination. Though every other technique discussed so far has its place, goal setting alone may be all you need. Along with making your goals challenging and meaningful, follow these remaining steps. Regardless of what other books say, this is what's proven to maximize your motivation." 3 bullet points. The first one, frame your goals in specific terms so that you know precisely when you have to achieve them. What exactly do you have to do? And when do you have to do it by? 2nd bullet point, break down long-term goals into a series of short-term objectives. For particularly daunting tasks, begin with a mini goal to break the motivational surface tension. For example, a goal of tackling just the first few pages of any required reading can often be enough to get you to finish the entire text. And the 3rd bullet point, organize your goals into routines that occur regularly at the same time and place. Predictability is your pal, so open your schedule and pencil in recurring tasks. Better yet, use an indelible pen. End quote. Want to increase your motivation and reduce your procrastination? Set goals. What are yours? Let's be specific. What precisely do you want to achieve? Let's break them down into short-term objectives. What are your dominoes? How will you island hop as you build success spirals? And what routines are you going to create? Write them in your calendar in indelible ink, aka permanent. Well, there you go. That's a super quick look at how to solve the procrastination equation. Here's to optimizing and actualizing as we increase expectancy plus value while we decrease impulsiveness plus delay so we can watch our motivation soar. Hope you enjoyed. Really fun book. If you're feeling it, I think you'll enjoy it. I also think you'll enjoy the notes on solving the procrastination puzzle, procrastinate, eat that frog, the now habit, and the power of habit. All right, let's check out some quotes from the sidebar, and then we'll wrap it up. All of these quotes are from peers. He tells us procrastinators who understand the processes behind their inaction can master them and become less stressed about their deadlines and more able to meet them. Since its first appearance in the English language in the 16th century, procrastination has identified not just any delay, but an irrational one. That is, when we voluntarily put off tasks despite believing ourselves to be worse off for doing so. When we procrastinate, we know we are acting against our own best interests. Piers tells us, never before in our history have there been so many temptations, as succulently devised, as readily available, and as adeptly marketed. Break down the tasks that daunt you into smaller and smaller pieces. Keep formal track of your progress. Count your successes. The history of procrastination likely began around 9,000 years ago, sprouting along with the invention of agriculture. Planting crops in the spring to reap them in the fall was our first artificial deadline. It was a task that civilization and survival required, but not one we had evolved to perform. Pierce tells us very few succeed in major life reforms the first try. Most of us need multiple attempts. Without impulsiveness, there wouldn't be such a thing as chronic procrastination. Intentions can even be used to implement other self-regulatory techniques, especially when expressed in an if-then format. We talked about that one a lot in solving the procrastination puzzle. Check out that for more. And finally, don't discount small gains, as over the course of a year, a 10% improvement in efficiency translates into more than an extra month of getting stuff done. There you go. Hope you enjoyed. What was the big idea that really jumped out at you? How are you going to make that a bigger part of your day-to-day existence? Get on that. Look forward to sharing more. Have another awesome day. See ya.
We hope you enjoyed this Philosopher's Note. Please go to brianjohnson.me to download more.